I think one of the biggest things COVID has taught me is what I value, like what I truly value.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's like, yeah, I value my time more than money these days, and like my freedom more than other things. And like, I want to do what I want when I can, and I want to be with my family more, and just like put my heart and soul into things that I really want in life, where I can look back 10 years from now and be glad that I did those things.
Do you love your business? You should, right? Well, sometimes we just don't. It's my hope that this, the My Daily Business Coach podcast, helps you regain a little of that lost love by providing tips and tactics, tools, insights, inspiration, all the good stuff to help you actually enjoy running your business. In addition to actionable tips and tactics that you'll be able to execute immediately, you'll also hear from creative small business owners around the world who've been able to sidestep the hustle and build a business that merges their passion with their purpose and provides a profit. I'm your host, Fiona Kalacki, founder of My Daily Business Coach. Let's get going. Hello, and welcome to episode 70 of the My Daily Business Coach podcast. Now, today it is an interview episode. I like all of the episodes. It's my podcast. I created it in a way that I would enjoy doing it. But I especially love the opportunity this podcast affords me to sit down with small business owners and really kind of shoot the breeze, see what they're interested in, see what things that have changed in their business since they started it, what advice they might give to their younger self, how their parents and family influence what they do. It's just a really, I don't know, I always walk away feeling really inspired, not just about, you know, what they've been able to build, but also taking certain elements or thinking about things they might have said in relation to my own business. So I know that today's interview will do the exact same thing for you, and I can't wait to hear, you know, what you take away from today's episode. But before I jump into that, I just wanted to remind you that I am running for the first time ever a live 8-week coaching program for Marketing for Your Small Business. Now, Marketing for Your Small Business is an online workshop and live workshop that I've run for years now. And it really teaches you the fundamentals of marketing, how to, you know, really get strategic about your marketing as opposed to just kind of ad hoc, scattergun stuff. Now, this 8-week program is actually in conjunction with the online course. So you can get access to the online course, you have that immediately. But starting February 16th, we also will meet for 1 hour each week to go through each of the modules. So say you've done the module and you've got kind of other questions, or you're thinking about, no, I want to try this, I want to test it, but maybe I want to validate those ideas before I go live with testing some marketing stuff. You'll be able to come into the coaching program and have myself to give you advice, as well as other small businesses. Now, this is all online, so it can be accessed by anyone, anywhere in the world. So if 2021 is your year to really get to understand your marketing, get strategic, get the right systems and processes in place so that it doesn't feel like a slog, definitely get in touch. You can do that hello@mydailybusinesscoach.com, and you can read all about the course and the program over at marketingforyoursmallbusiness.com, or of course just at mydailybusinesscoach.com. So we'll link to all of that in the show notes, but let's kick on to today's interview with an amazing small business owner. So today I'm talking to the fabulous Sean Woolsey, who is the founder of Sean Woolsey Studio, which creates handmade furniture, and it's just beautiful. It's modern, but it's also classic enough that you would want to, you know, pass it down for generations, and it's beautifully made. And they do everything from pool tables to these incredible smart standing desks to beautiful furniture. And as Sean talks about in the interview today, they've got a new line happening in Canggu, Bali. Just beautiful stuff. It's the type of things that you'd walk into a room or a hotel or somebody's house, and just that would be what you focus on immediately. Be like, oh, that's a beautiful chair, or that's a beautiful table. So if you haven't heard of Sean Woolsey or of his studio, definitely make sure that you check them out after the interview. Or hey, if you're multitasking, you could do it while you're listening. You can find it at seanwoolsey.com, and that's SEANWOOLSEY.com. It's just absolutely beautiful. You can also find it on Instagram at Woolsey. And of course, we'll link to that in the show notes. So speaking of Instagram, that's actually how I came across Woolsey first. I think I encountered him maybe 2011 or 2012 when Instagram was very, very new. And he at the time had just this seemingly fabulous life. And I was, you know, I was working in a very big corporation in the UK, and I would look at this Instagram and it would just be really inspirational. It was him and his girlfriend, and they were traveling to all these incredible places. They were surfing. They just had that very cool coastal vibe about them. And when I was stuck in, you know, the dark and dreary winters of London, working for a big company, working nights and really just, yeah, it was my escapism. And so I reached out to Sean and I actually featured him on Cool Hunting. And this is back in 2012. And at the time he was working as an artist. So he was creating these beautiful pieces, but he was slowly moving into woodwork as well. So he had these beautiful wood coasters and I think maybe cheese boards or some other stuff that he was working on at that time. Since that interview back in 2012, Woolsey has grown so much. And he really talks about the journey of how that actually happened, which I find fascinating. Often we can see this sort of transition in businesses, say, as a follower to the business on Instagram, but it's another thing to really understand, how did that actually happen? You know, how did you move from art into furniture? How does one do that? And, you know, what sort of upskilling did you have to do? And Sean goes into detail about that. Because nowadays, Sean Woolsey Studio is predominantly handmade furniture. And like I said, it is absolutely beautiful. And a real contrast to the kind of throwaway mass market approach of, you know, big box brands out there making furniture. In this interview, we also discuss the influence of Sean's parents on him in terms of creativity, starting his own business, following his passion. And it's really, really interesting to see where he kind of developed his understanding of creativity and innovation. And I just think it's always really interesting to find out where people are from. Now, we recorded this just on Zoom, as I do with most of my interviews, and Sean had actually just moved in with his wife and his child to a new house in Orange County that he's doing up. And so when we're on the video section of this, which always happens before I hit record, he was actually showing me the kitchen that he's in the middle of building, and he was making dinner at the same time as chatting. So there is a little bit of background noise. Now, we've done our best to edit that, but just keep that in mind. It's all just part of the atmosphere, really. And with that being said, let's dive on in to my interview with the brilliant Sean Woolsey, founder of Sean Woolsey Studio. Welcome so much to the podcast, Sean. How are you feeling right now? It's been a crazy 12 months and you're in the US as well.
It has. I feel good. I'm COVID-free, thank the Lord.
Yep.
But I am definitely in like the hotbed of COVID at the moment.
Yeah, because where are you based? In California somewhere?
I am in Orange County, which is south of LA by like 40 miles.
Oh, like where they did the OC.
Where they did the OC, yeah. And LA is awful, and Orange County is pretty darn bad too. Basically, like all of California is kind of shut down ever since the second surge that started after Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a friend who lives there who actually was on the podcast, Marowa, in LA, and it's crazy times. And you're also, we are talking in the week of the new president coming in. So I'm sure it's just a whole lot of crazy town. It sure seems that way from this side of the world.
Yeah, it's been very wild, but I think a lot of people are very eager for a switch of presidents and leaders for America. So we're happy.
Yeah. Oh, I think the whole world is eager for that to happen. And hopefully 2021 brings a whole lot of new goodness. But let's talk about your business, because it's a business podcast. Tell us a little bit about Sean Woolsey Studio. And people listening would have just heard me talk about it and how I came across you. Gosh, I think it was almost a decade ago now. But how do you describe what you do and all the different elements of your business?
Yeah, so we're a small furniture company based out of Southern California. We design handcrafted furniture. A lot of it's pretty high end. It's definitely fine furniture. We make everything from chairs to smart desks to pool tables and ping pong tables to outdoor chairs in Bali. We kind of have like a new wing collab where we're making a few pieces in Bali out of teak.
Oh, wow.
Outdoor furniture. And then the gaming tables is a large part of our business. So our ping pong, our shuffleboard, and our pool tables.
Mm-hmm.
And then ever since COVID hit, our smart desk, because everyone is working at home, our smart desk, I couldn't give them away before COVID. And then all of a sudden, now they're also our bread and butter. So we're selling those like hotcakes.
And they are pretty incredible. I'm going to make sure we link to the video of those in the show notes. But can you explain, I guess, as this is an audio
feed, yeah,
what the smart desk is? Because I saw it and I was like, oh my God, they're incredible.
Yeah. So as you know, like they say that sitting is the new smoking.
Yeah.
So a lot of people like to alternate or just stand, or like I've had a smart desk for probably 4 years now, 5 years. And I broke my back surfing, but we'll dive into that later. But I broke my back surfing like 9 years ago. So I have back pain. So if I sit for extended periods of time, it'll hurt. So I like to stand and I walk around a lot. And we just basically took a pretty typical base that you can buy online, or I mean, there's a lot of different base manufacturers, but we took like the shell, which is the base, and we fabricate a steel like perimeter that goes around it, which houses like three drawers in it. And then we make a beautiful walnut top. And with the top, it has a wireless QI charger, has three soft closed drawers, has a surge protector mounted on the bottom with like a little cable drop. So you can have all your wires like effortlessly just mounted to the surge protector, and then just one cable plugging into your wall.
Nice.
We make the monitor stands that go with them. So yeah, with everyone working from home, they are doing really well, and people like standing and sitting and sitting on a stool. That's what I do most of the day. I sit on the bar stool where I stand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome. And as I said, I'll link to them so people can see them visually, because I think you did a great description there. But yeah, seeing them visually, it's just beautiful. Like, it's not the average standing desk by any means. So you have been in business for a long time now. I think it's a decade, is it? Or
we just hit 10 years.
Oh, congratulations.
In June, yeah.
Oh, wow. That is huge. So firstly, congratulations. That's a mammoth effort for any business owner. Can you take us back to the start? So like, what was your upbringing like? You know, were your parents small business owners? Did your dad or mum craft furniture? Were they into design? Like what was your upbringing like? And I guess, how did that influence what you do now?
So my dad's done multiple things, but for probably 20 years, he did stained glass art.
Oh, wow.
And now it's extremely, extremely rare, but he did extremely high-end stained glass art where he would do windows and doors for like really high-end homes. And then he would do stained glass lamps, where he would do everything from the lampshade to the base and the bronze work and like the patinas and all of that. And then he did work for like Muhammad Ali and Steven Spielberg and Barbara Streisand and like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, tons of celebrities back in the day. And then he probably did that till I was about 7 or 8. And then they started kind of mass manufacturing stained glass in China, and most people couldn't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. And that was probably in the mid to late 80s. And people couldn't tell the difference. And the price was probably 10% of what he was normally selling them for. And so he lost a lot of business. And then he switched over and he became a photographer right before digital became mainstream. And so he was doing film and developing all his own photos. And I would go on photo shoots with him, actually. And he would do mostly commercial shoots. So he would work with a lot of businesses. So he would shoot like hotels and a lot of hospitality, a lot of restaurants. Mm-hmm. And then he would kind of also make and design their marketing material. So like pamphlets and catalogs and mailers and like all their print material. Mm-hmm. He would kind of be a one-stop shop where he would do the photos and then do some of the marketing. And then he did marketing for years. And then back in 2008, right before the collapse, before the Great Recession, they sold their house and I was living there. I was 22 and they moved to Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They retired and they have another house out in Palm Springs area. So they now kind of split their time between there and Mexico. So that's kind of my dad. My mom, my mom has a much simpler job because she worked for the same company for probably like 38 years, I think. And she just worked a corporate job doing insurance sales for like a large corporate company.
Wow. Very different.
But my mom is extremely creative, like maybe even more creative than my dad. I don't know. They're both extremely creative, but my mom paints so much and makes cards and she's always drawing and she's like, she can't sit still. Mm-hmm. Kind of like me, like I'm doodling right now.
And making dinner and doing a podcast.
Yeah, making dinner and doing a podcast. So yeah, my mom, both of them are very, I had a couple of apparel brands. I started the first one when I was in high school and did that one for about a year. And then I did a second one after high school through college for about 4 or 5 years. And both of them were extremely supportive. I actually shared a space that my dad owned that I used to office and warehouse all the clothing out of. And so, yeah, my mom took kind of the more corporate route, even though she's extremely, extremely creative. She's always making things.
Wow.
My dad kind of was an entrepreneur for his whole life.
Gosh. And so is that when you said before you had these brands while you're at college, what did you study? And did you have this feeling that I'm going to go that similar route to your dad in terms of having your own business? Or were you like, no, I'm going to study. I'm going to go work for someone else.
So I've only had two jobs my whole life. Mm-hmm. One was Round Table Pizza, which is a pretty popular pizza joint here in the US. And then I worked for Hurley, the surf company, for 2 years right after I stopped my second clothing brand. But I grew up, I don't know, I just have always kind of had the entrepreneurial spirit. Mm-hmm. Like even before I did the clothing brands, I used to wash little Duffy electric boats.
Oh, okay.
With a friend, and we named a business Rub-A-Dub Boat Detailing. I laugh at it now, but it was hilarious. We were like 14, I think, when we started it. We did it for probably a couple of years on a little man-made lake that we grew up living next to, and we would detail all these electric boats, and it was like the dream job, and we could work when we wanted. And that's when I really learned or figured out like, hey, I want to control my own schedule and have a lot of freedom and flexibility in what I do.
Wow. And living the dream from 14.
Oh, yeah, I try. I definitely have had stressful times.
Yes. Well, I'd love to talk about, because it's one thing, you know, people might be listening to this and then coming to look at you for the first time, particularly people on my side of the world who may not have heard of you. But it's one thing to be like, oh, yep, and now we've expanded into this and that and doing all these different things. Like, how did that actually happen over the last decade? Like, how do you make the decision to expand into a new product category? And especially if you have a small team, like, how do you actually do that? Like, for instance, with the smart desk, I mean, there's so much technology in that as well. Firstly, I guess, how do you actually make the decision to go into different categories of what you do? And then how do you make it happen? Is it just organic, or do you sit down and kind of plan and then find the right people to collaborate with? Like, how does that work?
Great question. So when I first started making furniture, I actually wanted to just be an artist and paint. And so when I left my job at Hurley, I was there for a couple of years, and that was the last job I'm sure I'll ever have that's like a normal job. I was really burned out. I started being on a computer all day and wanted to kind of leave apparel. I'd been doing apparel for almost 10 years at that time. And really, I knew I wanted to make things with my hands. I didn't know what. And so I first started making a lot of paintings and doing a lot of art shows. And I actually used to interview people. I tried to write a coffee table book. So I'd interview a lot of different people that I found inspiring. Mm-hmm. And I traveled a lot during that period of time. And during the tail end of interviewing people, I got a lot of inspiration just from being around these people. And I realized, like, I just got to start doing it, whatever I want to do. And one of the guys, this guy, Alex Beard, who was an artist in New York, I interviewed him. And one of my questions was, what does it take to be a successful artist? And I'll never forget his answer, because it was the best answer I've ever heard. He said, no plan B. And it like gave me chills. And I was like, okay. And I think that was like the last interview I ever did. I was just so inspired to start doing something. And I was young. And, you know, this was like the tail end of 08, early 09. And so the economy was awful. Luckily, I got on unemployment for a while, so I could kind of flow. I wasn't married. I didn't own a house. So my overhead was extremely low. And I started just making paintings and doing art shows and networking. And then I started framing my paintings, which is kind of what led to the woodworking. Mm-hmm. I started buying tools and making frames, and then making frames for other people's paintings because people liked my frames. And then I started making tables slowly, not more out of necessity than like a business drive. Like, I still have one of the first, I laugh at it now, but one of the first tables that I made for my girlfriend, now wife. And it was like the most simple thing looking back on it. But I slowly started just making things that were like purposeful and useful. And then people liked it. And at that time, reclaimed wood was really, really big, or getting bigger and bigger. And I have an uncle who had access to a ton of reclaimed wood. So I did the reclaimed wood thing for probably the first year and a half. And then slowly started acquiring more tools at the time. Then I took a class at a local community college. And that's when I got more serious and started buying more tools. Then I took another class at like a professional woodworking school here in Anaheim, next to Disneyland. And I took a couple classes at that shop probably 8 years ago. And that's when I was like, okay. Because at that time, the first few years, I wasn't fully doing furniture. I was still doing a lot of art and a lot of art shows. Mm-hmm. And I never set out to make furniture into a business. I just really enjoy making things at the end of the day, and making things that have purpose. And I really am like a problem solver. So I like the problem solving aspect of it, like designing and building my whole kitchen. I have never done cabinets until doing my kitchen. And
oh, they look really good from what I saw just before.
Yeah. They're good from far away. No, they're good. But I'm definitely like a perfectionist for sure. I always am learning, and I love learning. I think I'm addicted to learning new things for sure.
Amazing. And that's awesome that you're doing stuff in Bali as well now. I saw that on your website, I think, in Canggu, which is awesome. Such a great part of Bali. I've been to Canggu many times. But
awesome.
One of the other things I wanted to ask you about is, obviously, you've got this passion and this drive and ambition, and you know, you're a perfectionist and you want to find out how things work. You're curious. But you've also got a market, you know, especially today, there's so much marketing involved in a business. And you started, you know, you've been in this game for 10 years, and now there's so much more competition, and not just competition, you know, locally or even nationally, but internationally. We can just go on Instagram and find like 10 people that do a similar thing. So how can you talk us through social media? Because you've made a really good name for yourself and a strong name for yourself. And that's actually how I came across you. I think it was in 2012 when I interviewed you first for Cool Hunting, because I just found you on Instagram, which was such a new tool at that time. How have you marketed your business? You know, like you said, your dad worked in marketing. Did you get tips from him, or did you work with an agency? Like, how have you continued to kind of do so well with the brand while still being relatively small?
Yeah, that's another great question. I have a lot of people that either will work for me for a little bit of time, or other furniture makers that ask kind of the same question, because the making is, I always tell people, like, the making is the easy part. It's the selling that's hard. So when I first started out, I would make anything for anyone. So I would copy designs. I would try to make anything. It was a complete like one-off shop where I would do custom work. And we hardly ever do custom work anymore. Because I left the apparel business, and I built really two brands by the time I left. And with catalogs, and we were making things overseas, and I knew eventually I want to do this with furniture and create a company that's a brand and make catalogs and make t-shirts and stickers and like make something that is more than just like your local woodworker shop. So it definitely took a while, but I started just designing my own products and turning down the custom orders. And that was the hugest thing, like, that a lot of other people in the woodworking field, like, they still take on custom work. And when you take on custom work, it's great, but you lose so much time when you do one-off jobs versus when you design things and you make it align and you can figure out production and how to like speed things up and outsource efficiently and find suppliers that you want to work with. So yeah, the first few years, I mean, really Instagram, my wife and I, we did a big road trip around America.
I remember watching it jealously in a cool van.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Instagram had rolled out the map feature many moons ago, where you could then click on a map and see like all your like tagged images for like America, say. And so they wanted to feature a bunch of people, and they featured me for a while. So that's where I got like a lot of my followers at that time. And I wasn't doing a ton of woodworking. Well, I was still doing some, but it was very early on in the company. So you'd have to really, really scroll back if you wanted to find this. But yeah, so that was like a huge, just kind of lucky win, where I had a lot of people that all of a sudden wanted to see, just because my wife and I were traveling around in a 87 Westfalia around America for a couple months one summer. And so then I got back home, and it was back to the furniture business. And luckily I had all those followers. So they kind of came along from the road trip ride to the furniture ride. Of course I lost some of them and gained others and stuff, but in a nutshell, like, Instagram's for us, it's a great platform to show our work. And I think we have obviously much more fandom and fans out there on Instagram than we have actually like customers on Instagram. A lot of our customers like don't really use Instagram, or they're too busy to, or whatever, or they like do, but they're private.
Yeah.
It's great for us to just showcase. I'm actually on an Instagram break right now. So I kind of have a love-hate with Instagram.
Yeah, I actually like literally just two nights ago watched an entire YouTube video about a photographer in the US who gave up Instagram for a year. And I watched it for 20 minutes and I was like, oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah, I'm the same. I do these breaks and they get longer and longer. Like, I'm, what is it, the 17th? So yeah, I haven't been on Instagram for about a month.
I have done that. I have stopped Instagram. I did it as an experiment though, to stop it, and actually saw absolutely no change in my business. I mean, I love Instagram as well, but I also hear you on the whole, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, for us, it doesn't really affect our business. It's cool to, the reason I deleted it, you know, for a while is whenever I really want to focus, like I'll be honest, like I was spending like an hour and a half a day on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the number one reason. And I have a lot of opinions on Instagram. So, or just in social media in general. So yeah, I'll eventually hop back on, but that's not like what's really turned the levers for us necessarily. The main things is when we first came out with our first ping pong table a few years ago, we hired a PR company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when probably like, I forget what you featured on Cool Hunting, but.
Probably 2012 or maybe 2000. Was it our ping pong table?
No,
I think the ping pong, actually I might've done the ping pong table. I think I put you on twice or three times. So the first time you're making coasters, you were doing like kind of like a resin sort of painting or something.
Oh yeah. Okay. So that was before ping pong. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we might've done the ping pong as well.
So yeah, we came out with a ping pong table and I hired a PR company and they did an excellent job. And we were really the first people that I know of to like make a high-end ping pong table. Now there's a lot of competition. There's knockoffs like of our very first design. And but we never thought we'd sell it. Like I grew up playing ping pong. I play tennis. I just kind of made it just for fun for us. And we were not having high hopes at all, but we sold the first one within about a week.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that like really snowballed. So we got a lot of press and that has helped a lot. We do a lot of Google ads currently, which is most people find us via Google these days.
Yep.
So they're just doing like traditional Google searches or a lot through Pinterest also.
Oh, I'm always forever telling, because a lot of my clients work in a similar space in homewares or, you know, making of something or interior design. And I'm always saying, oh my God, Pinterest is such an untapped market. Every time I've started doing some advertising on Pinterest and it's blown me away, the numbers versus other avenues.
Yeah. Yeah. Pinterest and Houzz is another one that's big here.
And so what would you say, I guess, to somebody starting out now? Would you recommend the same sort of thing of going to a PR agency and going like, let's focus on this one product and go hell for leather? Or, you know, would you just say, I mean, it's hard to say because you've had it for 10 years, but is there one particular marketing thing you think stands out at the moment for?
I think for us, like all the, like the best winners, like we have a lot of different products, but the top winners are always the items that, even if it's like ridiculously priced, you know, like our ping pong table is $9,000.
Wow.
Our shuffleboard table start at like $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of our items are like 10 times to 20 times like what a normal one would be.
Mm-hmm.
But the design is what sets it apart. But like those items are really hard to make. The ping pong table is the easiest, but shuffleboard and pool tables are pretty difficult to make. So I think the harder it is to do something, the more narrow the field gets, you know?
Yeah.
It's like there's not many people that are building rockets to go to Mars right now. Because it's pretty difficult to do that. So like I've just learned, like it's like the smart desk, really why we're winning in that space, because ours are 10 times what a lot of other cheap ones are, but no one has a real walnut one. No one has three drawers. Like we really focus on the details and we make things like literally it'd be like what I want is kind of how I design. It's fully how I design. So I don't skimp on cost cutting and like I buy the best, most premium things when we build things. So I think my advice though would be to like find your voice, whatever it is you're doing. Like you really got to find your own aesthetic and your own voice creatively for what you're doing. And then once you find your market, like hopefully it's a pretty niche market. I think businesses that succeed, they know their market really well. They really find a niche. And once you find that market, we really work on customer service. You know, I listen and read to a ton of other business people. One of the other ones that I was listening to was the CEO, the guy who started Zappos. He recently passed away.
Oh, yeah. He wrote the book Delivering Happiness.
Yeah, but it's like their customer service. Like, he had two pairs of shoes. Mm-hmm. He had sandals and then like normal shoes. And I was blown away. I was like, this guy doesn't even like shoes. And he started the biggest shoe company in the world.
Yep.
You know, but like they really deliver on their service. So I think one of the big winners for us is like, once we get a customer, we can almost always sell to them again and again and again because our service is really high.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely focus on, we don't have a lot of people that we sell to, but we don't need a lot of people that we sell to also.
Yes. Yes. I'm always talking to clients, especially if they're selling products, about, you know, what's the average transaction value and then what's your frequency of purchase? Because your frequency of purchase comes off the back of good customer service. You know, people will come back to purchase again if they think they've got a great, you know, it's a great experience.
Yep.
So the other thing that I know that you've done a bit of is collaborating, and you've collaborated, you know, with some other people that are, you know, masters in their craft. I'm just wondering again, how has that happened? And also kind of what advice you might give if there's people out here listening to this who are thinking, I'd love to collaborate with, say, you know, somebody who's complementary to my business, or say I'm a lighting designer and I want to collaborate with a furniture designer. Or how does it come together? Or do you have any advice for, should people just reach out, like bite the bullet and reach out? Or how have your collaborations come about?
Yeah, collaborations are huge. I'm always down to collaborate. So yeah, if you have a business out there, hit me up. I think collaborations are huge. If you share the same customer base. Yeah, we are constantly, like, for us, our biggest thing, because we don't have retail stores.
Mm-hmm.
I'll speak into my business. Like, the number one and two emails that we get is, hi, I live in New York City. I want to see your pool table. Where can I go see it? So people want to touch it, sit in it, feel it, but we don't have showrooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not like West Elm and CB2 and Restoration Hardware and those kinds of brands. And at the end of the day, like, if we can get people, we do have a showroom in Costa Mesa and a lot of people come by, but it's very limiting. So a lot of what we're trying to do right now, especially this year, is to try to partner and do collabs with other retailers that would share our, like, have a customer overlap.
Mm-hmm.
And get our products and do, like, say, a chair collab with certain companies that we see overlap with, and then their customer would be able to sit in our chairs and play ping pong while you're at a retail store or at a hotel, or those kinds of things are huge, huge, huge.
Amazing. And so you do make beautiful work. Like, I remember years ago, you put out a desk and I contacted you because I thought, you know, oh, they're amazing, but the cost to get it to Australia was like, it's just not economical. But I just wanted to ask, obviously you're in the kitchen now, you're cooking and you're creating the kitchen cabinets. Are you constantly changing up furniture in your own home, or you know, are there pieces that you just...
Yes. Yes, we are. My wife is next to me, she'd laugh. Yeah, constantly, literally too much.
And do you make all of those pieces, or are you buying them from like other makers or creators?
No, like our dining table, our chairs we made, our couch in here we made, we have a Campbell chair here. I'm about to make a huge L couch.
Oh, amazing.
Most of it, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of viewing this new house. We just bought this house about 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of viewing this as like a second showroom in a weird way.
Nice. So you can do your photo shoots, everything.
Yeah. So we can do photo shoots over here. Like, our new bed is going to go in our house. And I mean, hopefully we could host people once COVID dies down and have parties and have people over here and they can, you know, sit in chairs and play ping pong in the yard and hop in our pool. So
amazing. That's the goal. Oh, I look forward to seeing more of it on your Instagram.
Yeah.
Another thing that I have seen on your Instagram, God, I sound like such a stalker, is that you are a father. Congratulations. And so how do you manage that? And I know this is a question that is often asked. I know I get asked it quite often as a woman, but I don't think we ask it enough of men who are looking after children as well. So how do you kind of, how have you found a way to be able to be a dad, be a partner? Do you still surf even though you broke your back?
Oh, yes. I surf today. I surf a ton. I do yoga. I do a lot of running also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, usually every day I'm physically active in some way or another.
And so have you had to, with your business, to be able to be, you know, have that time to be physically active, to be around your family, to be outdoorsy? Have there been things in your business that you've said no to or stepped back from or not gone full throttle into, you know, grow to be able to keep your lifestyle?
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. A friend and I were talking about that this morning, actually, because we do outsource. We don't make every single thing. So we outsource, you know, all our upholstery is done a couple blocks away, but like our upholsterer, we probably are half of his business now, and he does all our upholstery. And then we have three different welding companies. We have two other wood shops that help out on certain things. We have a powder coater. We have a lot of different people that we sub out certain things that we can trust them to do well for us. So I've never wanted to grow a business where I manage like 10 people, because I quickly learned, like, I used to manage like 4 people in the shop, and I just know that managing a lot of people is not for me, because I like freedom. I like freedom probably too much. So yeah, I like being able to roll into work when I want and leave when I want. And if I want to go to Disneyland, or like, I like to just be super, super flexible and not have to be like, oh, I have to be here for a meeting and then like go to this thing and that thing. And yeah, I did that when I worked, you know, at Hurley for a while. And I quickly realized, like, okay, if I'm doing my own business, I'm going to make the rules, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to totally make it how I want to do it. But yeah, I do have balance. I think, Sarah, I have balance. I definitely am a workaholic. You know, I'm constantly thinking about my business, but when I, you know, I'm here at home and playing with my kid all the time. We have one girl who's 4.5 right now.
Oh, gorgeous.
Yeah, but I think life is all about balance. I've definitely had burnout periods where you're working an insane amount and you don't really love what you're doing for a while. And I'm definitely not in that stage right now. Which is good. I'm more in the inspiration stage, because for me, like, I get inspired when I can actually like sit kind of back away from my business and view it on like a larger level than like see it from an outside perspective, you know?
Yes, definitely.
And like add products that like our customers would think of, because when you're in your business, like day in and day out, it's so hard. You're like banging your head against the wall, looking at the same graphic or singing the same song, and you're making like minor little tweak after tweak, and you don't know, like, you just need to like step back sometimes and go for a walk or surf or do whatever it is that lets you like escape for a while and then come back to whatever problem you're solving.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. I actually think I remember looking into the science of this, and there's like the alpha waves need to hit, and then that, like, kind of whatever happens in your brain that you get that kind of aha moment. It can't actually happen until the alpha waves have hit, and the alpha waves can only hit when you're relaxed. So that's why people get like great ideas in the shower or in the bathroom or wherever, because they just stop thinking for a second, and then those waves can hit, and then the ideas can come. Apparently,
Best ideas come in the shower and during runs.
Yep.
And when I'm driving.
Yes, I often, when I'm driving as well, I'm like, oh, and then I kind of like have to switch over, like pull over and write something down. But you have talked about Tony Hsieh, the founder of Zappos, and you've talked also about outsourcing, which I think is such a huge thing that people need to embrace more of, whether it's, you know, outsourcing, like you said, some of the craftsmanship, or outsourcing like your admin tasks or something else. But what else do you think has helped you most with your business? Do you have any mentors? Do you have any courses or books or anything else you've had to do? You mentioned before going to school and learning a bit more about the craft. Have there been any kind of business mentors for you that have helped?
It's funny because I know you're a business coach, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I hired a friend. I've done a lot. There's definitely, you know, my dad would probably be my number one on that because he's done his own business multiple times and he's taught me a lot. And he's still, I call him whenever I'm in a pinch or trying to wrap my head around certain things. But I had a business coach who's a friend who, when he was starting out, I hired him and he helped me for a while. I listened to loads of audiobooks and I listened to a lot of podcasts. But yeah, other than that, I mean, probably the biggest support group is I have a pretty tight knit group of friends. Every single one of us is entrepreneurs. And then I have another group of friends where we meet up and those are all entrepreneurs. So there's some overlap between those two groups, but I'm around a lot of entrepreneurs in my day-to-day life. So it's cool to get different perspectives on like hiring people or on just all different kinds of things, because whatever your business is, there's going to be overlap. Even if you're in a totally different industry on how to grow, or they'll see things differently, or they'll just view your business differently than you view your own business. So it's great. That's probably been the number one thing that has helped me, that and my dad for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm often telling people, even especially at the end of business coaching, I'm like, you know what? Who's going to be in the group? Because you can't just keep paying somebody forever. Like, you know, it's my hope to like help educate people so they can go and do it. But I'm always saying you've got to cultivate your crew around you that are there, regardless of, you know, who you're hiring or not. Do you have any kind of tech tools that have helped? Do you have any apps or any particular like platforms? I don't know if you use Shopify or you use something else to sell your products or Squarespace, or are there any things that you just absolutely love before business?
My wife says Siri.
Oh, you use Siri all the time.
I use Siri. Jim Collins, who wrote the book Good to Great, he did an interview with Tim Ferriss like a while ago. In my mind, like it was amazing. Like truly, I've probably listened to that interview like five times. And he is a brilliant man. But one of the things I'm going to start doing this year, I haven't done it yet, I will admit, but I have definitely thought about it, is he has like creative goals. He's a writer. He has the most simple strategy where he does it on his phone. He does it in notes. I use notes constantly, just the app on your Apple computer.
Yeah.
I live my life off of notes. But he has this formula. It's for his day. So at the very end of his day, he will rate -2, -1, 0, +1, or +2. And that's how he does his system. And, you know, today for me, like, would probably be like a +2, but not really creatively. But I've seen friends, surfed, had coffee in my friend's backyard and eaten a breakfast burrito, rode my golf cart around the block with my daughter, like did all these things. And then he would like write down, but he tries to get to a certain number every year, you know? And then you can look back too and see like, oh, well, it's actually like, why was this day -1 or -2? And like, what affected that? Because sometimes you have these little things that occur, we all do as humans, where little things will occur and they shape your entire day without you like realizing it.
Yep.
So that, I mean, I'm always trying to learn different things. Cooking is something that I really want to learn more and more, and I'm going to do a master class online. Yeah, I think there's no like tech tools. To be honest, I'm not really techie, which is probably why I don't like Instagram that much, but I don't spend a lot of time on my computer.
Yeah.
Like I don't use SketchUp hardly at all. all. I can use it like in a very rudimentary form, but like when I come up with new designs, it's like pencil and paper, and then I build a prototype, and then I tweak it, and I tweak it, and then I launch the item.
Yeah, yeah.
I work quick, but I don't spend hours like on a computer, really.
Which is awesome, and actually leads me into asking you about what the Sunday Slowdown is, because I noticed you have this other account, the Sunday Slowdown, and can you tell us a bit about what that is?
Yes. So Sunday Slowdown is just, I mean, really, it's just our blog mm-hmm. that we started during COVID to, you know, everyone's at home more. I mean, all the stats for people, I mean, it's sad. I don't want to go into it, but like, you know, depression and anxiety and all the bad stuff is just through the roof. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone, except for me, is like on their phone a lot more and they're on their computer a lot more and they're just, their screen time's way up. So we started the Sunday Slowdown to like give you like a really quick dose of something that would inspire you, whether it's like a interview, like we do a good amount of interviews, or it's like just imagery, but a lot of the imagery is supposed to make you want to like be outside and be with nature and travel, which is hard to do right now still. But Sunday Slowdown is meant to like, so you enjoy, you can realize like what you enjoy. I think one of the biggest things COVID has taught me is what I value, like what I truly value. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like, yeah, I value my time more than money these days. And like my freedom more than other things. And like, I want to do what I want when I can. And I want to be with my family more and just like put my heart and soul into things that I really want in life, where I can look back 10 years from now and be glad that I did those things. But the Sunday Slowdown really is like, a lot of it is interviews. When we first started it, it was a lot of interviews with people to see what they were doing during COVID. Mm-hmm. We didn't think COVID would last this long, did we?
Neither did we at all. I remember in March, yeah. My sister booked something in June. I was like, it'll be done by June. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, we all thought it'd be over. So we were just like, oh, let's launch this little interview series and let's interview all our other friends. And then we quickly were like, oh, man, this thing's going to last a while.
Yes. And you're right in the thick of it as well. My goodness. So well done on coming up with that. And I totally agree. I think everyone needs to put that. I have a lock on my computer, my phone, so I can only be on apps for half an hour for the day. And sometimes the thing will come up saying, you know, it's locked at 9 a.m. And I'm like, oh, my God, I've already used it up. And other times it'll be, you know, 10:30 at night and I'll be like, oh, that's good. Yeah, I've got half an hour the whole day. But yeah, I agree. We're too invested in technology all the time. What's one thing, because you have been in this business for 10 years and you've been so successful and, you know, changed and adapted and things, what's one thing you might have done differently if you were starting out now? Or it might be that you wouldn't change anything.
I think I would have gotten serious faster. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I didn't just dive into the water. Like I put my toes in and then my, you know, it took me a while to really be like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the first 3 years I was kind of just half in, half out, thinking about other things. And I had plan Bs, you know, and it took me a while to be like, okay, I'm doing this and I'm going to lock in and like really invest in learning woodworking and furniture design and buying books of like all the great designers and really like focusing on that.
Mm-hmm. Great answer. And then I guess on the flip side, what are you most proud of from your journey owning and running this incredible business?
I think for me, the thing I'm most proud of is that I'm able to do what I love every day and make enough money to live how I want at the end of the day. I'm never going to get rich doing what I'm doing, but I don't really want to be rich. Mm-hmm. Like I want to be fulfilled and just really happy. Like I wake up stoked every day going into work. for the most part. I mean, yeah, we all have our headaches and fires and things that we don't want to deal with. But for the most part, I'm stoked to do what I want to do. And if that changes, you know, like there was a long time when I was in apparel where I was way over it. I was extremely burnt out and I just wanted to be done. And I think you wake up after doing the same thing over and over and over. And that's how some people just get in like major life ruts. But I just knew I wanted to get out. And I was like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I got to figure out what's next.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it's like doing any kind of entrepreneurial venture is hard. It's not for the faint of heart. It is super, super hard and challenging, especially starting out. And I think the thing I'm proudest of is like, I have a couple employees. I love my employees. I love who I work with. I love the company that I've created. It's a little micro company, you know, like it's nothing compared to so many other companies, but we love what we do every day and we're proud of what we do. And it affords me the lifestyle that I have. So I'm stoked and I pinch myself that I get to do this, you know?
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. And that's all everyone ever wants. Like, you know, all the money in the world, like what can you do with it at the end? You know, we're all going to die at some point. You need to look back and be like, I lived a really great life. I really enjoyed it. And I was there for my family and loved ones. And so what's next for you and where can people connect with you? We will, of course, link to your website, which is Sean Woolsey, and it's SEANWOOLSEY.com. And you can find, you're off Instagram at the moment. So where's the best place for people to connect with you if they wanted to get in touch after they've listened
to you? Shoot me an email. Yeah, go to the website. You can find my email or contact us through the contact form. What's next? So every year I try to really try to design like 6 to 8 new products. That's kind of continually my goal work-wise. So yeah, we have 2 new smart desks that are coming out because our smart desks are doing well. We have a new pool table that'll come out this year. And then, yeah, there'll probably be a couple of other ones. Every year we try to make a new catalog. We'll probably start working on that soon. It'll probably be a bigger one actually because 10 years. But yeah, I mean, for us, it's like slow and steady growth and like just design a few new products every year that we're really proud of that we can make and that we know that is our brand. That's kind of like every year I kind of have work goals and usually a lot of it's like typical numbers stuff. But the fun stuff for me is like, okay, I want to like challenge, you know, like the last 2 months I've been working on my kitchen cabinets and then now I got to build a kitchen island for us. And then I'm going to build a huge deck in our backyard. But yeah, continually learning new things is really what's fun for me. There's an artist, Robert Rauschenberg. He actually was on the top of my list when I was doing interviews years ago. He's passed away now, but he's a big American artist. And one of the things I love about Rauschenberg is that he would pick a medium artistically and get really into it and then just completely like switch it up and move to something else. Like he has a whole cardboard series where he just did art on found cardboard, you know, or just like the ideas behind it. Like he did these assemblages that he's really, really famous for. And then he'd move on to screen printing and photography. And like, you know, like the minute he got bored, he'd start learning something else and figure out how to incorporate it into his like work. I mean, he's always been a huge inspiration for me just design wise, like kind of that philosophy of like, oh, I just learned how to like work a lathe. Like, how do I turn these round legs and then incorporate it into products that we make? I like that mentality.
Yeah, such a good one. And always you keep moving, you know, moving, not just staying stuck and complacent. sometimes. Yeah, that sounds
good. It's like the Mark Twain quote.
Yes.
I like Mark Twain quotes. But he said, the average man dies at 72, but most men really die inside at 27.
Oh, that's really sad.
You know, but
it's really true. Like, you see those statistics about, 60 or 80% of people don't like what they do for a living. It's like, mm-hmm. Life is short. And especially where, you and I are in very privileged position to be able to even have access to start a business or do something that we like. And yeah. So many people are in that position, but they don't see it, and they kind of create these prisons for themselves.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, and I'll let you get back to your dinner and your Sunday night. Thank you. It's been such a pleasure, and you couldn't see me, but I was nodding along to so much of what you had to say.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure, and I really just want to thank you and wish you the best for 2021 as well.
You too. Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay. All right. Bye, Fiona.
Bye. Oh, what an awesome guy. I absolutely loved chatting to Sean about how he's built his business, Sean Woolsey Studio. And I just loved how many tips and insights and inspiration he kind of shared in that interview. Two things really stood out for me. One was that idea of having no plan B, going all in on something. And I really found it interesting that, he was so honest and said, I didn't really go all in on it. And I wish that maybe if I was looking back, that I had have done that a bit sooner. I think there's a lot of small business owners that feel that way, that maybe by, year 5 or year 10, things really kick off and they think, oh, if I kind of had really, pushed myself a little bit more in the first few years, or if I'd really just taken it as a serious thing. But then on the flip side of that, I also think that there's so much learning that comes with experience. My business is now in its 6th year. And when I started out, I literally gave myself a year. I said to my husband, I'll give myself a year. If it doesn't work, I will, go back and get a job. I'm employable and I'll be able to find a job, or, I'm happy to go work elsewhere, just knowing that I gave it a really good shot. And in that first year, I probably did keep it a bit safe. Even year 2, I was still going in, I was consulting to companies very similar to where I'd already worked, and it was very safe. I wasn't necessarily having to go out and get heaps of clients in the way that maybe in year 3 and 4 I had to do. And then obviously later on building online courses and all of those kinds of things. So I absolutely love that advice about don't have a plan B, just go all in. The second thing that I absolutely loved about what Sean had to share was his ideas around Instagram and his admittance that, sometimes it's not the funnest place to be, and that he does take regular breaks from it. And he talked about being on a break, right now. I've talked about this quite a bit on my Instagram and with client calls. Instagram, as a tool is fantastic. It has given so many business owners the opportunity to be found. It's brand awareness. It, is not a huge investment in terms of financially, but it can be a huge investment for people's time. I always talk about this in my Marketing for Your Small Business course. And anytime I talk about marketing, really, social media is just one connection channel. It is not a marketing plan. And you've always got to remember that you don't own social media. You do not control social media. Things can change overnight. So you do not want to build your whole business on a platform like Instagram. And if you are doing that, I would urge you to try and look at other ways that you're guiding people from Instagram into your real life. So that might be coming to an event. It might be getting on the phone. It might be emailing you, or you emailing them. Nurturing that offline away from social media can be one of the best things that you'll do for your business. But just really, really liked that he was really honest and open about social media, because I think so many small business owners, I know because I talk to so many of them, social media really is kind of a tax that they feel that they have to pay to be in the small business world. And you've just got to always remember or think about if social media is controlling you, or if you are in control of the time and the effort and the energy that you put into social media. So absolutely love that. Like I said at the start, Sean Woolsey has and does create the most incredible furniture. So definitely go and check it out at seanwoolsey.com. And their Instagram is The Woolsey. And of course, I'll link to that in the show notes. Now you can find the show notes and a full transcript of my interview with Sean over at mydailybusinesscoach.com/podcast/70, as this is episode 70. Like I said at the beginning, I am launching an 8-week online coaching program for marketing for your small business. So you not only get the course, which has been available for a few years and, you know, has done wonders for so many small business owners being able to really understand marketing and then be able to create a strategic plan, but you'll also get 8 weeks of coaching with myself and a small group of like-minded small business owners. So if you are interested in that, it kicks off February 16th. Please get in touch with us because we are capping it. We're having a small group just so that everyone, you know, gets a chance to talk and share. So you can do that via email, hello@mydailybusinesscoach.com. Just let us know you're interested. Or you can just, if you're like all guns blazing and you just want to get in there, you can do that over at marketingforyoursmallbusiness.com. And of course, we'll link to those in the show notes. Finally, if you found this interview inspiring, definitely go and say hi to Sean over on Instagram. Again, it's just @thewoolsey. And of course, share it with a friend. We just learn so much from one another. And I really, really know that Sean's insights and tips and ideas will really resonate with so many people. So yeah, definitely send it to a friend if you haven't already. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. Thanks for listening to the My Daily Business Coach podcast. If you want to get in touch, you can do that at mydailybusinesscoach.com or hit me up on Instagram @mydailybusinesscoach.